posible para apoyar a una oposición siria que prácticamente no tiene presencia significativa en la palestra política y militar en Siria. Él hizo un pronóstico absolutamente correcto, sin embargo, para concluir en soluciones totalmente errado. ¿Qué es lo que necesita? ¿Qué es lo que está perdido en el Medio Oriente? En el Medio Oriente está perdida la justicia, está perdida la paz. Entonces se necesita un plan de un país que está diciendo que sus valores en democracia, en libertades, etcétera, y que es el país que va a conducir una alianza internacional contra el terrorismo. Me parece que lo que tenía que hacer era presentar un plan de paz, soluciones que ayudan a esta zona para que no tengamos más que vivir la circunstancia. Ayer Al-Qaeda, después Al-Nusra, ahora es Daesh y luego el Estado Islámico. Vale decir que todos los días un nombre nuevo para un terrorismo absolutamente permanente.
Más de una persona que asegura de que cada vez de que un avión controlado desde la distancia, los llamados drones, golpea una familia, bombas desde los drones, pero eso no constituye un acto de salvajismo como el que se atribuye a estos musulmanes del Estado Islámico. ¿Cómo se puede entender eso?
Mire, qué bien que hayas dicho de que a través de estos ciegos, no solo aviones, sino quien está manejando estos aviones, matan a inocentes, familias completas, y sin embargo, la publicidad que acompaña estos graves hechos en contra de una población civil, entonces nos demuestran que mataron a tanto de Daesh, a tanto del Qaeda, a tanto de Al-Nusra, etcétera, y no se atreven a resaltar el hecho de que con ello están llevando una población civil por delante, y precisamente lo que están haciendo es crear más adeptos a la causa de estos terroristas, que no son más que asalariados. Por cierto, del Islam no tienen absolutamente nada. Debe empezar el señor Obama diciendo: a nuestros aliados los turcos tienen que cerrar su frontera, a nuestros aliados los saudíes y otros gobiernos del Golfo tienen que cesar en fomentar esto. Los medios de comunicación, no solo árabes y turcos, sino occidentales en general, deben cesar en fomentar el odio.
Tienen que decir la verdad para el pueblo americano. No es así que combaten el terrorismo. El terrorismo, primera cosa que tiene que hacer, que tiene que cortar los fondos de este terrorismo. Están pagando, mi amigo, a cada uno que está peleando con los terroristas, de 700 a 1000 dólares al mes en una área pobre, que el salario no sube más que 100 dólares al mes. Entonces, cuando termina el dinero, termina el terrorismo. No le dejan a esos fondos, no le dejan a esos soporte.
Lo que hace Estados Unidos, lo hace Israel, y viceversa. De que Israel mata 2.230 palestinos, de los cuales 90% son civiles. Hay casi 570 y algo que son niños, niños menores de 10 años. Hay casi 300 mujeres, 200 ancianos, etcétera. Y sin embargo, con cada ataque, con cada muerto, Israel contabilizaba de que han matado a unos terroristas. Dicho sea de paso, no son terroristas, son resistentes a la ocupación y a la agresión. Sin embargo, así son presentados. Por eso que considero que el plan de Obama, lejos de buscar una solución al problema del Medio Oriente, más bien lo agrava y lo proyecta para muchos años y consecuencialmente con consecuencias absolutamente dañinas. Matando a terroristas es más terrorismo. Debe empezar el señor Obama diciendo: a nuestros aliados los turcos tienen que cerrar su frontera, a nuestros aliados los saudíes y otros gobiernos del Golfo tienen que cesar en fomentar esto.
Por su parte, el profesor Miguel Tinker Salas reconoce que la opinión pública norteamericana muestra un gran apoyo a la intervención en las encuestas, sin duda por el impacto que causaron en la psique colectiva las supuestas decapitaciones de periodistas en videos promovidos masivamente por los medios corporativos.
Esos videos lo que buscaban hacer en realidad era involucrar a Estados Unidos aún más todavía. Eso era el motivo de los videos. No era para asustar a nadie, no era para dramáticos como fueron. La realidad es que lo que buscaban era que Estados Unidos se involucrara más, porque en el grado que se involucran más, más se destabiliza toda la región, y esa realmente es la meta final.
¿Alguien duda que la reducción de gas ruso a Polonia y la intención de Washington de eliminar la dependencia europea en el gas de Moscú puedan estar detrás de los inminentes ataques contra Siria? El derrocamiento de Bashar al-Assad permitiría que Qatar e Israel construyan un gasoducto en Siria para enviar gas a Europa. Eso permitiría que Tel Aviv se convierta en un exportador de energía del futuro y en una gran influyente fuerza política en Europa. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica. Puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblossinfronteras@gmail.com.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista.
Nos vamos a noticias del estado de Sonora, donde se denuncia que el Grupo México no ha limpiado los ríos que contaminó cuando una de sus minas derramó más de 40 millones de litros de arsénico y otros metales dañinos a la salud. El periodista Ulises Gutiérrez denuncia que Grupo México no ha limpiado el río Sonora y que los efectos de los metales podrían provocar graves daños a largo plazo en la población local.
Varias organizaciones, incluido Greenpeace, ha denunciado que esta limpieza realmente pues es más mediática que real, ¿no? Que ha pasado tanto tiempo sin que se haya realizado una verdadera limpieza del río que en realidad no. Ya en este momento, aunque lo intentaran hacer con todo el equipo y todo el personal necesario, pues ya una gran parte se habrá infiltrado a los mantos acuíferos. Hay que recordar que pues esto ocurrió el 6 de agosto y hasta la fecha pues prácticamente fue hacia el 2 de septiembre cuando iniciaron con un programa de empleo temporal el gobierno del estado para limpiar el río, pero los tramos en los que avanzaban la limpieza eran muy cortos, ¿no? El río tiene una extensión de más de 270 kilómetros. El Grupo México dice que tiene a 1.200 personas limpiando el río, pero todo el mundo coincide en que pues nadie las ve, todo el mundo las busca y nadie encuentra estas cuadrillas de Grupo México. Los mismos alcaldes de los 7 municipios nos han dicho que solamente 3 de esos alcaldes han visto estas cuadrillas trabajando y las han visto en sectores muy reducidos, así es que pues se puede asumir que la gran parte de este río, los más de 200 kilómetros, no han sido realmente limpiados y no han sido limpiados con eficacia y con una... Incluso Greenpeace ya ha dicho que es irreversible ya en este momento el daño que se le ha hecho a esa región. La población pues todavía sigue sufriendo los efectos, ¿no?, de que sigue la prohibición para extraer agua a los 500 metros de cada lado del río, así es que la gente no puede realizar actividades económicas en gran parte de estos 7 municipios que están alrededor del río Sonora, y hay el estigma entre quienes viven en otras ciudades de que todos los productos que vengan de esa región estarían contaminados, aunque realmente más allá de los 500 metros del río no tendría por qué haber contaminación en la producción. Sin embargo, pues ya nadie quiere comprar los productos de esta gente y esto los está llevando a un momento económico muy difícil de desesperación. Incluso han estado cerrando carreteras, tomando alcaldías y protestando de esta forma, ¿no? En los últimos 2 días, pues, se intensificó el enfrentamiento entre el gobierno estatal y el gobierno federal. El gobierno estatal, más que nada, está acusando al gobierno federal de que no ha atendido la emergencia como debería, que los dejaron solos al gobierno del estado enfrentando a Grupo México y haciéndole los reclamos de que remedie toda esta contaminación, y que incluso los delegados federales tuvieron conocimiento días antes del derrame de tóxicos, tuvieron conocimiento que había irregularidades en el manejo de estos tóxicos, y estas denuncias las hicieron los alcaldes de Cananea y de Arizpe por escrito. Ellos aseguran pues tener la documentación, ¿no?, de que acudieron a la Procuraduría Federal de Protección al Ambiente, a la Comisión Nacional del Agua e incluso a la Secretaría Nacional de Medio Ambiente, y en ninguno de estos lugares realmente atendieron sus denuncias, más allá de recibir los documentos que les llevaron 2 días en un caso y 4 días antes del derrame en otro caso. Sigue la emergencia. Hoy por la tarde estamos esperando, en unos minutos más habrá una reunión entre, por primera vez, directivos de alto nivel de Grupo México y los 7 alcaldes que enfrentan esta emergencia. Han dicho los alcaldes que si no venían personalidades con la capacidad de decisión de parte del Grupo México, pues entonces ellos se levantarían de la mesa y a partir del día de mañana viajarían con cientos de sus habitantes a tomar las instalaciones de la mina ya en Cananea. Así es que, bueno, es muy importante lo que suceda más tarde. Por primera vez, directivos de alto nivel de Grupo México y los alcaldes de los pueblos afectados.
Era el periodista mexicano Ulises Gutiérrez. El equipo del Informativo Pacífica los invita a que nos sigan en Facebook, a través de Twitter en @info-pacífica, en el canal del Informativo Pacífica en YouTube y en nuestro blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, freakradio.org. Fight the system.
Tune in at 7 p.m. for the Great Leap Forward. This is a really good interview. You really, this guy, he is.
Cut! Take two!
Tune in on the Great Leap Forward. We have a radio station.
And that's on Wednesday anyway, but the Great Leap Forward is at 7 o'clock. This is the small crawl forward. This is Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides coming up, and I'll be with you for 2 hours from 6 to 8. Stay tuned, and we'll talk, or at least I'll talk at you until you talk at me.
Here's the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land?
It's a question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide.
And welcome to the September 11th edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides 2014, 13 years later, and we're provoking more attacks on the U.S. by bombing them overseas. Well, you know how it is, folks. Unless we do something, we're stuck with the folks who have the weapons and the power, and they'll continue to do it. You're tuned to, not tuned, I guess you are computer fixed on the stream of freakradio.org. We are still without an antenna location, though we do have an operational antenna and transmitter. If you want to help us out, give us a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will pass on whatever info you have. You can also go to our, the website you're on as you listen to this, freakradio.org, which now is an easier way of reaching the actual stream of the program. You just click on the stream. It used to be you had to go through a more kind of disguised process. Not so anymore, apparently. I think that's been changed, although I haven't tried it. Anyway, for all you people who are listening who also want to participate in the show or decide at some point you do, the call-in number here is 831-427-FRSC 3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. 427-3772. I don't think we do. We have a second phone line. That's right. I want hats off to Uncle Dennis. You can call him up yourself in a couple hours. He'll be on with From the Cream to the Dregs. And thank him for, he and R. Duck, for putting in there the line that the rat chewed up. We have a hungry rodent in the studio who tends to nibble. And hasn't nibbled on me yet, but I understand. I haven't even seen this rat, but anyway, it's much fabled and apparently a very caused a lot of problems in the past. And so not sure how we're going to deal with this creature. But we have a second phone line, 469-3119, 469-3119. Call in on one, call on the other. Use two phones at the same time. Feel free to call in and talk. So this show concerns itself with the voices of people you don't usually hear, folks on the street, folks who get only 2 or 3 minutes at city council or even less, and folks whose views are, you get to hear them here anyway. I'm kind of one of those folks, although I'm lucky enough to have access to the airwaves more directly. You can too, by the way. You can get a radio show with free radio. You have to kick down part of the rent for this studio, which some of us feel is exorbitant, but then aren't the rents all exorbitant these days? Yes, they are, until we do something about it. To be involved in Free Radio as a broadcaster, you go to the website, freakradio.org, and that is how you can do that. Now you can learn how to apply. There's application forms, as well as, I think, an updated schedule, although there's still no schedule posted in the studio. Damn. Anyway, a couple of announcements. Tonight, Beer Not Bombs is happening up in, I guess it's Ben Lomond? No, Boulder Creek. At Boulder Creek Santa Cruz Mountain Brewing, there's going to be a kind of a benefit from 5 to 10 for Food Not Bombs, and it's called Beer Not Bombs. They're going to give a dollar donation to Food Not Bombs for every beer you buy up in Boulder Creek. And you can also buy a signed copy of Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs' book, Hungry for Peace. You can also get one free online, by the way, but Keith could use the support. He works 26 hours a day and continues to smile, amazingly enough. Food Not Bombs, of course, is a group that serves people food downtown here in Santa Cruz, and Keith is connected with Food Not Bombs organizations throughout the world, actually, not in terms of any kind of centralized organizing. It's all utterly decentralized. They don't have any central committee who issues orders. Everybody starts a Food Not Bombs wherever they want and does what they want with it, which can make some pretty strange Food Not Bombses. But Keith was in at the beginning, and that was back in 1978, 79 in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Food Not Bombs began as a kind of a protest against the military and bankers, and the fact that there was, like they said, they had a food line outside a bank or perhaps it was outside a military establishment, I never quite remember which, and it evolved into an ongoing combination of providing food, showing up at political events with food, sort of the edible version of the Raging Grannies. Raging Grannies are, of course, a group that sings, and they're usually over the age of 50, but I don't think they have any age discrimination. So for a younger granny, or even if you're not a granny, but you want to sing, you can maybe jump on board. I was reading a book by one of the Raging Grannies recently, Jan, who is writing murder mysteries about Santa Cruz. It's called An Unconventional Murder. I'm just beginning it, and tip of the hat to her for writing that book. And we'll see how it goes. I'm not much of a murder mystery guy, but I'm very interested in Santa Cruz, and there's some homeless scenes in there that are interesting. That's one of the focuses, or foci, if you will, of this show. Anyway, Beer Not Bombs, 5 to 10, up at the Santa Cruz Mountain Brewing Company, 402 Ingall Street, 27. It says Santa Cruz, California. So am I wrong? I guess it's not up in Boulder Creek. What am I talking about? So I guess it's down in Santa Cruz at 402 Ingall Street. Apologies for the confusion here. Check it out, 5 to 10 tonight. And go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, to get at least what they are putting out as the announcement there. There's also another event coming up that I'm going to be going to, a Fight Back concert and event in the People's Park up in Berkeley, right off of Telegraph Avenue, between Haste and Dwight Way, for all you old Berkeley fans. It's a Fight Back concert and event in the park. Happens day after tomorrow from 1 to 5. Musicians, poets, and speakers. They're going to be mostly folks I don't know, but some of them I do. Gerald Smith, Navid Shagia Running Wolf, Earl Gilman, he was on the show. Russell Bates, there's an old-time activist who's been with People's Park for a long time. Robert Norris, I've heard about him. Julia Vinograd, she's a poet who's been on the show. Kirk Rumpton, Gary Hicks, Soul, Dennis Banjaman, Kevin Vance, Dave Carter, Salty, and that old-time activist, also occasionally on this show, at least once or twice, Michael Delacour, Berkeley activist and union organizer and socialist. I might even say communist for a long time. Not sure if he calls himself a communist. Again, that's 1 to 5 on Saturday. I'm trying to organize a caravan to go up there, and so far I think I got one bite. And but, you know, we'll do what we can. I have a vehicle with a space probably for one or two, and hopefully others will be interested. If you are, give me a call off air at 423-4833. That's the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-4833. Again, a Saturday event up in Berkeley, Fight Back concert and event in the park. And what this is about, it's a pushback against police and business repression, landlord and corporate repression. Here's how it's described. In the last half year in the South Campus area of Berkeley, there have been hundreds of arrests, banishments, and stay-away orders. Sounds like San Lorenzo Park. The Telegraph Avenue Merchants Association has taken the landlord's contribution, hired an ambassador force that acts and does a lot of the work of the police. They have stopped our communication by wiping out venues that in the past we have communicated through. He's talking about their tearing down flyers, I think, and eliminating places where people post stuff. They have wiped out all the community on Telegraph Avenue. This is a rally open to everyone to speak to overcome this repression by the police, landlords, business, and corporations. And I'm going up there because, I have a nostalgic fondness for Berkeley. I go up there regularly. I'll also be picking up Street Spirit up there, which is where it's distributed from. That's the monthly homeless newspaper that homeless people and poor people can sell on the streets to make enough money to sit in Denny's and have a cup of coffee for 45 minutes before they kick you out. I think they've got some new policy at downtown McDonald's. I should say Ocean Street McDonald's. I think it's Ocean Street McDonald's. Maybe it's the Mission Street McDonald's. That is now limiting people severely and selectively, telling homeless-looking people to leave in spite of the fact that they're customers. When they tried this 20 years ago at McDonald's in Santa Barbara, when I was working down there as a homeless advocate for the Legal Defense Committee, we fought back. We actually did a sit-in, and they changed their policies. And so Who knows? Maybe history will repeat itself here. I haven't gotten any more reports than one or two about this new McDonald's policy. If anybody has any information about it, please call in here at 427-3772 or call in to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, or come to a Huff meeting. Huff meets Wednesdays at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is on 703 Pacific Avenue. Free coffee, free munchies, lots of free talk. So again, if you're interested in coming to this People's Park thing, and you have a vehicle, that would be even better. We're looking for people to help caravan. If you don't, maybe able to squeeze you in. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll be leaving probably around 11 on Saturday. That's the plan at the moment. So I'm going to begin now with some interviews, which I haven't played much of in the last show or two. A quick update, though, before I do. The shitty council meeting, or the city council meeting, as some would have said, that happened on Tuesday, first one of the fall, featured lots of backslapping and backpatting and commending and mutual admiration from both the council and the people they have speaking there around a couple of programs that I have some serious doubts about, three of them actually. Homeless Lack of Services Center, which is putting in fences, locked gates, ID systems, sort of turning it, the Homeless Lack of Services Center, into a mini prison, although they're calling it security for the community and the homeless, which is ridiculous. There's no evidence of criminal behavior of any kind of serious sort, although, you know, drug dealing, for sure, that happens, but that's happening all over the place, and it's, frankly, it's a staple of American society, and I'm not a fan of drugs, or much of a user, except coffee and chocolate, occasionally marijuana, perhaps, but this is a decision adults have the right to make. And there are some arguments to be said that, well, you got some clean and sober programs around there, and doesn't that disturb the people and interfere with their ability to come off of dangerous addictions? Because while drugs are an individual choice, for some people they're a bad choice, some drugs, in some quantities, for sure. And the answer is yes, but the decision to locate everything together does not mean you get to criminalize everybody else because a certain group of people is attempting to change their behaviors in certain ways, or, you know, give up their addictions. They have a right to do that, and they should do that, and it's probably good that they do that. Should they then impose conditions on everyone else around them and turn the rest of the community into criminals, that community there, or make it appear that there is a criminal problem that requires treating everybody like inmates of a jail? No, don't think so. On the other hand, I don't have a lot of input from the Homeless Lack of Services Center's clients themselves. And I was thinking as I drove down here today of actually doing some more tabling in front of the Homeless Lack of Services Center in their so-called low-impact or no-impact zone. That's a fictional creation that the Homeless Lack of Services Center has created around its premises. They call it a campus. It's not entirely clear how they will punish people who don't either vacate the area there, or if they use the area for free speech activities that the Homeless Lack of Services Center doesn't like, then will they be punished by the Homeless Lack of Services Center? I haven't had a lot of good information on that. It seems to me if they're declaring it a no or low impact zone, they probably have some punitive backup, but I don't know. Anyway, so we've done HUFF, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom organization that I work with, has been out there in the past, not recently, to sample homeless opinion. I think most recently, it was about a year and a half ago, we went out there to demand, and actually we were successful in demanding, although the demand may not have lasted in terms of its any lasting effect, but at the time we were successful in getting the Homeless Lack of Service Center to provide documentation, receipts we called them at the time, that when people signed up on the waiting list for these programs, which is now supposed to immunize them from camping tickets, or at least immunize them from prosecution for camping tickets, they would get that documentation. And we actually provided a little form that they could give to people which they claim to still have around, but I have not seen much of. And under the unlamented Monica Martinez, who has moved on to higher CEO status in another organization after having been, graduated from her smiling role as the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, the executive director. She persistently refused to actually implement the rather obvious policy of providing to people who wanted them documentation that they're on this list. So when the cop comes and pounding on them at night and says, or waking them at night, flashing a light in their eyes, they pull out their documentation and say, you know, officer, I'm sorry, I don't mean to to spoil your quota record here, but I'm on a waiting list here, and that means any tickets you give me for this will be dismissed. It also means that you're harassing me. So please, let me sleep. Look, give me a legal place to go. You know, simple enough request. We made that request when we were doing Homies for the Homeless protest at City Hall in 2007. And, of course, they had no place for people to go. They just ended up eventually, after a week, driving everybody away with threats, which is the standard conclusion of many homeless protests. It's true here and elsewhere, but not the necessary conclusion. That is not necessarily what happens at the end of such things. And sometimes the positive results come out. So Peace Camp 2010, the month-long protest at the county building, followed by 2 months, a smaller group continuing a 24-hour protest at City Hall, did result in the creation of this provision of the camping law by City Attorney Barisone, who slid it right through City Council in a way that homeless activists and homeless social service providers, who aren't interested anyway, but who never could have done themselves or would have had great difficulty doing, whatever the city attorney says, the City Council gives, yes, sir, three bags full. The new one is Condotti. Barisone is retired. I think he's still... I'm not sure if he's on right now for the next year, and Condotti is kind of easing into the job or what. Anyway, we're talking about, this long aside, is about the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of Tuesday. And the Homeless Lack of Services Center on the consent agenda was getting an extension of its time. It has not been able to get in the security gate. It claims it's a PG&E problem with a power source, as well as some funding holdups for getting the ID cards or the ID strips that they people will, you know, be able to use at the gate to get in. And I have no idea, you know, what the real story is, but that could well be the truth. And it would have been something I would have commented on, but I sent a letter to Lynn Robinson, the mayor, because I wanted to be assured that I could comment on it and record it for this radio program without being arrested if I left the room. Without having to, you know, scotch tape the tape recorder to my chest or my hand to the tape recorder or sit within 2 feet of the tape recorder at all times or stand next to it holding it up to the speaker, which is what she is requiring. Having pushed through a city council set of decorum rules that actually was the rule for 13 years before, established in 2001, but never implemented because it was so obviously impractical, abusive, and discriminatory. Impractical, I mean, who can record that way? Abusive, it hurts people who are, well, I'm still pretty spry for my age, in my 60s, but, you know, there's some who aren't, and I'm not always at the top of my game. And it's also unreasonable. And finally, it's discriminatory because it was created because three homeless activists, I was one of them, raised the issue of the sleeping ban in the winter of 2000-2001 by having a coffee klatch at then-Mayor Fitzmaurice's office. His response to this, instead of trying to expand shelter, trying to talk to homeless people, trying to address these issues in a substantive way, or transparent way, was to go to court and get an order banning us from the offices, where we were not illegally occupying or engaging in civil disobedience. We were sitting there waiting to talk to members of the city council and inviting homeless people to come and do the same while having a cup of coffee, which we provided, hence the name, the coffee klatch. And in response to this lawsuit, which kept us away from city council for a month and from city council offices for 6 months and before it was dismissed because it was a groundless lawsuit. It was designed, it was a slap suit, a strategically oriented lawsuit against public participation. It was Well, decorum rules were created by Mayor Fitzmaurice, and one of those rules was a tape recorder shall not be unattended at City Hall, which meant that you couldn't leave it sitting, either a video or an audio, where unless you were standing next to it. And no one's done this. I mean, no one has paid any attention to this rule until January of this year. Actually, it was December when the city clerk came over and told me, we're going to be enforcing these rules. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. Well, you know, fire away, Gridley. What are you going to do? You know, I'm not going to be obeying rules that will essentially burden my ability to record and are simply unreasonable. Anyway, this whole has gone on for quite a while. And I got a long letter from an attorney who addressed it to Lynn Robinson, which I'll be probably reading on the air on Sunday, suggesting that this is not only unconstitutional, it violates First Amendment rights guaranteed by the state and federal constitutions, but it also violates the law in California, which is codified in a thing called the Brown Act or Public Meetings Act. Public Records Act is something different. But the Public Meetings Act states you have the right to record, not to get an official recording by the city, which they do make, and they do make available fairly reasonably for only a dollar on a disc, and they do provide a streaming video a couple of days later, usually too late for this show. So it's not helpful for me if I want to do an immediate response. So in any case, I asked Mayor Robinson if, given this new response, this new concern by the attorney that had sent a letter to her, you know, can she please restore the prior policy and stop the harassment? And her response through the city attorney was, no, we're going to continue doing what we've always done. They didn't say, fuck you, but in essence, they were denying that basic right. And so I didn't go to that section of the meeting. Instead, I went to a protest that happened at 4:30 on Tuesday, which I talked about on Sunday in the Sunday version of the show, which is from 9:30 to 1 for all of you newcomers. Tune in on Sunday for a longer version of the same thing you're hearing now. And we were raising issues that had been sort of formulated for the Association of Faith Communities Friday meeting, which happened last week. And that was an issue that some activists at Huff felt was very strongly about. 1,000 units of simple housing is what the demand was for. And so Raven spoke about that issue at the city council. A number of others did, so did Elise. I gave a 5-minute presentation for Huff on, based upon the concerns that we've asked city council candidates to answer. And I think I may have read that on the air, but there were a variety of concerns which only one city council candidate has actually responded to in any detail, and that is Lainey Sherman. And I want to thank Lainey for doing that. I don't much like her responses, but I respect her for having, first of all, kept her word and to some extent kept up within a reasonable amount of time responses. So even though I may not be a fan of her policies, a fan of what she's willing to do, a fan of her position, I am pleased and gratified that she, at least of all the candidates so far, is actually willing to answer specific questions about, the obvious questions like eliminating the curfews down in front of City Hall, the curfews in front of the library, the curfews on the levee. Curfews in the parks, eliminating the sleeping ban, ending the downtown ordinance harassment. She hasn't given the right answers, but she, at least she's given some answers. A lot of them are politically vague, and I probably should read them on the air. Maybe I will later in this show, if not on Sunday. It's a good idea. I think I'll have to make a quick note of that so I don't forget to do that. It's a good idea. On Tuesday, and this is the lengthy kind of florid and flowery and round the bend and round the bushes and roundabout way of describing it, we had a protest where pushback Pat Colby and Raven and Maya, and thank you for all for coming to this protest. This was a lot of strong women came to this one, not too many of us boys, but. Brownies, coffee was served, Joe Schultz provided soup, and there was That's when I showed up at 4:30, and it was around the time they were talking around the chronic offenders program, though they're calling that now the DAP, Downtown Accountability Project, or what I call the DUP, Downtowners Underwriting Police Enforcement, as I like to play around with their acronyms. And this is a program which masquerades as, or claims to be, and I'm not entirely sure that there's no truth in this. I think there's some truth in this. Helping 36 people who are selected from so-called chronic offenders downtown. And these are people that they don't want to say this. They call them the most vulnerable. I say they're the ones the merchants don't want downtown, the ones that are most bothersome to the courts. And they give them the choice. You either get jailed or you get, we'll put you through an evaluation process for 5 days, and then maybe we'll provide you with a strict program of housing if you follow certain requirements. And it's obviously a coerced program because of the other alternative. And that is really the bottom line. That's the problem. That's the problem with homeless courts. That's the problem with, social service people who come along as they mop up and destroy homeless encampments but provide no real alternatives, but pretend that they're providing alternatives, is that they aren't giving real choices. They're just putting a pretty face, a flowery cover on what is essentially a homeless removal program. And that's just wrong. Sorry. And it happens because the merchants have so much power and the activists have lost their power or aren't exercising it or dispersing it somewhere else or have been priced out of the area. There are all kinds of reasons. And it's also true that, fighting these little fights, as has been pointed out recently at a Huff meeting and is also pointed out online by more pungent critics of mine, what you're really looking for, when you try to expend your energy against the sleeping ban or against this particular bad law or that particular bad law, this was pointed out by Elise at a meeting of Huff. When you're dealing with an abusive system, it's almost, you can look, consider it as though it were an abuser. An abuser, in order to humiliate, bully, and control you, says, get down on your knees, pick up that piece of paper, go over there, wash that floor, and no, do that, do it this way. No, you're not doing it properly. Makes a whole bunch of requirements under the threat of force. And that's what the downtown ordinances are, a whole series of requirements. And they don't have anything to do with reasonable concerns. They have to do with providing maximum power to the police. And power to essentially make it an unwelcoming environment for people that the merchants arbitrarily and the police as their agents and the security guards and the hosts decide don't look right downtown or aren't behaving properly. Where it's not that the behavior itself is criminal, because that would be one way to deal with it. They don't want to do that because that would require actually finding crimes. But instead, they've gone beyond 12 square feet. They don't, even though they have the business licenses, as Officer Barnett did recently with a hemlock tattoo person, the woman who was doing that, she spoke about that at City Council on Tuesday. Even though the permits are there, even though it's an art form, even though it's wanted by the community, even though it's within all the guidelines, it's 14 feet from a building, 14 feet from a crosswalk, 14 feet from a bench, 14 feet from a phone kiosk, and so forth and so on. And the 1% area allowed still for free speech activities in the downtown area. Yet, what happened? The officer will say, you do this again, you're going to get a ticket. And because this is not art, you can't show yourself, you can't even get a permit for this. And that has also been said to other people doing activities downtown that previously had not had other officers had told them. This is another aspect of this whole cruel situation. One officer tells you one thing, oh, you're okay, you're fine, we like you. And then next officer comes along and says, no, you can't. And you are in a situation where you're bullied from pillory to post. Kate Wenzel went through this process. And it's all based upon giving police maximum power and a complete obliviousness to the real rights of human beings downtown who are poor or homeless or struggling. It's based upon the idea that the streets are simply conduits to the businesses for tourists to use. And this is something that Santa Cruz activists, some of us, have fought for decades, and we'll have to obviously continue to fight if we're to maintain any space whatsoever. At City Council, this issue was only brought up during the so-called oral communications period, which is the period during which Huff activists talked about the 100 units of simple housing, as we called it. A roof, a place to sleep, a place to go to the bathroom, and a place to shower. That's it. Not looking for anything fancy, not looking for anything wonderful, just those things. And that, it's not that, people's tenants' living spaces should be degraded to those conditions. No, it's that until those conditions exist, and even when they exist, there's going to be real questions still, but to go outside and criminalize human beings for the act of sleeping or doing any of those things, showering, taking a crap, sleeping, all these things are basic human needs and requirements. And, you know, where have you heard that before? So you are tuned to Free Radio, and that is would be 101.3 FM, but we're not streaming. And it looks like, I mean, we are streaming, but we're not broadcasting. So it's really up to us folks here in the community, and I'm talking mostly about actually folks in the collective who, unfortunately, we're not doing too well on this job, but that's why we need your help. To find a place to put up an antenna and to proceed, I'm going to play a little, some old comedy. This may be ill-advised, actually, because it's, this is a form of, this is satire from some time ago, from a decade ago, during the Bush era. It's by a group that sometimes can be pretty funny, usually is pretty lame, Capital Steps, but I play them pretty regularly anyway when they come out with a new thing. This is something that, it's not that new, but it is something that I hadn't heard before, and perhaps you haven't. And I'm looking for a couple of numbers here. It's called I Want It Daddy's Way, which, of course, has to do with the elder and the younger Bush, the former Führers, now, of course, being trumped by Obama, who's hassled, harassed, and jailed more whistleblowers than Bush in all his years, and who's expanding the wars again in spite of his promises, and who's, you know, allowed for the expansion of the NSA and the spying regime, who has declared any citizen in the world can be a target if he's or she is declared a terrorist. Stuff that I don't think Bush would have claimed, at least not explicitly, he could get away with. But because Democrats are in power, and the Republicans would be no better, but the Democrats are no better either, this is what's happening. The Democratic opposition, which would be yowling about the war if they were not in power, until they get in power, which gets to take over the war, and they say, we're doing a fine job. Obviously, these corrupt war criminals, because that's what they are, really. I mean, come on. What else? Have to be thrown out. Probably prosecuted and punished, because that's really the only, I'd like to say, and I used to say, why not just dismantle the power structure and we can all play happy together? And that's, I think, ideally what you want to do. And you get to go through reconciliation, as I'm told is done in South Africa and other places. But I think we're pretty far away from dismantling that power structure. And dismantling that power structure means identifying the war criminals in power now and going after them, prosecuting them, making it clear wherever they appear in public that they are not welcome. And that's had some impact in Europe already. I see we have a caller. Sorry, caller, I haven't noticed you. And my phone line has been down. Let's put you on. Hi, caller. Sorry for the delay. How are you doing?
Well, you should be sorry, Uncle Robert.
Well, I am. I mean, I'm a little sorry.
I just called to make sure that, you know, people who are interested know that there's a Beer Not Bombs function going on right now, even though those of us who are loyal to your show wouldn't dare go anywhere else. But, well, maybe I could take a radio with me.
You can't take a radio, David, but you can take a computer.
Beer Not Bombs.
Yeah, Beer Not Bombs is happening. That's downtown, right?
Yeah, 402 Ingle Street, number 27.
Now where is that anyway?
Good question. I've been by it 1,000 times and I can't tell you how to get it. It's right downtown, right?
No, it's on the west side.
Oh, it's on the west side. No wonder. I've been by, I guess, only 100 times.
Yeah, I've already, you know, I announced that it's happening from 5 to 10, and every dollar,
yes.
Every beer you buy, a buck goes to Food Not Bombs. So,
yes, exactly.
So are you and Becky planning to drive up to the People's Park protest?
Becky just stumbled in. She's already been there. She doesn't drink. Neither do I.
No, no,
I don't drink at all.
Not the beer thing. The protest on Saturday.
The protest on Saturday.
People's
that's
Park.
Up to San Francisco, huh?
Berkeley.
Uh-huh. Up in Berkeley, yeah. She just got in the door and haven't talked to her about it yet. I will get back to you, though.
All right, let us know.
Okie dokie.
Let us know how the beer is.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And my apologies to folks if you've been trying to call in on any of these issues, please try again. The phone line was blinking, and I was nodding off, apparently. So, let's hear a little bit from Capital Steps from this earlier album, and I'll be back.
Hi there. Former President George Bush here. How are you? Good to see you. Now that's George Bush Sr., not to be confused with the current president, George Bush Jr., my son. Scary, little bit scary. Well, you might recall back when I ran for president, had me a little slogan, 1,000 points of light. Remember that? Sure you do, you were two. Now my son, he was a bit of a party boy back in college, little bit of a partier, bit more like 1,000 pints of light, if you know what I mean. So let's welcome him out here now, my son, George W. Bush.
You are my father, and I hate to bother. Believe me when I say I want it Dad's way.
Now, George, you've got my genes, and you know what that means. You will get the big push, 'cause you're a son of a Bush.
Tell him, Dad, how you offered me campaign chips.
I said, run an ad showing Monica. Read her lips.
Gee, that's rad.
That kind of stuff is child's play. You want it that way.
I've got no experience running this land from running a baseball club, yeah.
That's okay, son, I will lend you a hand.
I'm not a bush, just a shrub.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Grandpa.
Hey, Jenna. Hey, Barbara. You made the front page for drinking underage.
I think that beer rocks.
You're a chip off the block.
Tell me why.
You're using that fake
ID. Tell me why.
You can't resist a party.
Tell me what you'll become acting that way.
I don't know. President someday?
Just heard, babe, it ain't no lie, the Democrats had to go. So remember I told you that I really believe the liberals will cry. Maybe that's why every little thing we do should be really good for you. We don't want to lose it again. We're not like the Dems, baby, when you finally choose your favorite party. Guess what? It's the GOP. Hey, you know me, I'm GWB, and I followed my daddy to the presidency. Girls try to sex us, questions perplex us. I'm straight out of Texas in my brand new Lexus. I'm fresh, no preservatives, you'll say I'm superlative, kicking it with my compassionate conservatives. Now I'm the president, and it ain't no joke. I only drink Pepsi 'cause I won't do Coke.
I'll just be chillin'. Please don't be illin'. Your wallets I'll be fillin'. I'm a tax cutting villain. They say I'm dumb, but don't let it trouble you. Give it up for the dope rhymes of the W.
Yes, I'm Dick Cheney, yes, I'm the real Cheney. I'm not all soft and all John McCainy. So will the real Dick Cheney please stand up? Please stand up, please stand up.
Well, I'm McCain, see, I'm not like Dick Cheney. When I grab power, I'm just like Khomeini. So will the real Dick Cheney please stand up? Please stand up.
Can't stand up.
Every little thing we do should be really good for you. We don't want to lose it again. We're not like the Dems. Baby, when you finally choose your favorite party, guess what? It's the GOP.
Did Gary Carter take a polygraph and give us answers that won't make us laugh? Don't get excited when the young girls stare. They're staring at your stupid blow-dried hair. Don't think you're so clever. We'll pursue you forever. With whom did you hook up? What crime did you cook up?
I believe I can lie. 34 years a married guy. When I'm subpoenaed every night and day, I make up things and lie away. I believe I can score with any intern who comes in my door. I believe I can lie.
Lie, lie, lie.
Excuse me, Mr. President. Excuse me, sir.
What's on your mind?
Mr. President, now that you're out of office, I'd just like to ask you a couple of questions. I mean, about that Monica Lewinsky thing.
Who?
Come on, Mr. President. How were you able to avoid prosecution?
Let me just check my position statement on that, and, oh, yeah, let's see. I said, it wasn't me.
Cause sucking in and he got your red hand and creeping with the girl at work. Pictures of you with the fat intern and your wife went berserk. How can we forget what you had said to us that night on TV? All this talk of sex, was that a right-wing conspiracy?
I'll never admit to you that I got my freak on. Republicans would just have another thing to speak on. So what if she used me to try a brand new technique on? Best for you if the situation not to call for hearings. As your president, I really know how to play. As long as Hillary was out of the way, I'd never admit to anything they'd say. They'd accuse me and I'd say, no way.
But we caught you in the hallway.
It wasn't me.
Heard you did it with you all day.
It wasn't me.
What about your office desktop?
It wasn't me.
Heard the sound of your pants drop.
Uh-oh, wasn't me.
Scandal really caused a big mess.
It wasn't me.
We got to see the stained dress.
It wasn't me.
Heard the Oval Office door lock.
It wasn't me.
Heard the sound of some boots knock. Cause sucking in and he caught your red hand and creeping with the girl at work. Pictures of you with the fat intern and your wife went berserk.
How can you forget what my term did for the economy?
All we're asking for is just a bit of an apology. You should tell us you're sorry since you finally got caught.
I'm not listening cause the babes here in this crowd are so hot.
Yeah, that was four from the Capitol Steps album. It is an album. It's a sort of a secondary release. I Want It Dad's Way. I Want It Dad's Way. It's a GOP. I Believe I Can Lie. And it wasn't Bill. So we'll be hearing some more probably a little later in the show. You are tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. This is Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Be with you for the next hour and 15 minutes. And again, I got a long-winded description wandering in different directions about the city council meeting on Tuesday, although, you know, I try to cover different things, I guess, as I go. Other things on the city council that were of interest that came up were the two issues of the chronic offenders slash downtown Downtowners underwriting the police enforcement program or the Downtown Accountability Project, the idea being to essentially change the behavior of the most visibly and costly chronic offenders, where it wasn't clear, and this is one of the problems, it wasn't clear what the chronic offenses are. They did say, Susan O'Hara or Jeff Rozelle or some spokesperson for this group, which is a mixture of district attorneys, probation officers, a few social service people. I guess Danielle Long is involved, the downtown outreach worker. It's sort of a mass supposedly designed to help people who are very vulnerable downtown get the fuck out of there. You might say, let's put it more gently, get into programs where they can be rehabilitated and no longer chronically offend. That is to say, no longer have the merchants calling because of, you know, having ambulance calls for drunken problems and so forth. And, you know, I think it's good that programs are made available. And insofar as programs are made available, I'm supportive. Insofar as programs are made available with coercive, other entailments and entanglements, not so much, not so much. Perhaps it's a libertarian in me, perhaps because I don't have a shop downtown, perhaps because I don't like to see massive police reactions to people sitting next to buildings or engaging in henna tattoos or trying to display their artwork or playing music in an area that's a little larger than 12 square feet, although it's still, I think, generally true. I haven't checked it in the last week or two that almost everything that's being done downtown violates the downtown ordinances in terms of space requirements. So police just enforce them whenever they feel like it. And that means Officer Barnett, the bull in the china shop, maybe I should call him Bull on Pacific Avenue, or Barnett, can do what he wants. He, of course, is the officer who was accused by Yamenides Brown, who wrote an article about it in the Indy Bay, of racial discrimination and profiling downtown against her fiancé and her brother, one of whom had a cigarette in his hand but wasn't smoking it, and Barnett insisted on giving him a ticket, and he said, apparently he wasn't interested in the ticket. At which point Barnett called for backup, and we've had six squad cars and massive arrests and resisting arrest charges and court dates and a lot of bad stuff. And if this were just sort of a rare exception, it would be one thing. But if you talk to people of color and if you talk to poor people downtown, you see that this happens with disturbing regularity. It's along with this. Not only are is militarized equipment being provided to different police departments in this country, but there is a militarized mentality that is approaching, that is encroaching, that is becoming a part of it all. Anyway, back at City Council, they passed unanimously another $57,000 for Susan O'Hara, who's the nice and somewhat forthcoming, somewhat contradicting, self-contradictory staff person for this program, which supposedly picks up the most vulnerable people and puts them in programs to get them off the streets. She claimed, and I don't say she's telling falsehoods, that there is a real drop in the arrest records of these folks. The real question is there a drop in the arrest records of everybody else in a downtown? To me, because the massive amount of money that was used as justification for the public safety task force, or the public hysteria task force, as I call it, last year, when Deputy Chief Clark came up with his homelessness massive arrests in the Poganip, causing, I don't know, 40% of the busts and 33% of the tickets, or vice versa, were for homeless people. He didn't mention that the specific crimes involved had to do, in the main, with sleeping. And you're going to be able to bust people for sleeping, unless you want to pump them up with meth and have them walk around all night, which some say is what they're doing. I don't know if I want to believe that either, but so anyway, at City Council, the issue is really, they passed the security gate unanimously, I would presume. I wasn't there for that vote. They passed the downtowners underwriting punitive police enforcement, masquerading as social service programs. Again, I'm still persuaded that's really what's going on, unanimously. And they also had the latest on the Public Safety Task Force recommendations, which I was not following because I was also there, as I mentioned on the show, to assert the right to audio record, as I always have done. And in the process of doing this, Officer Bush took away four different audio recorders from me and stopped my recording. I appealed to the mayor to no avail. I suppose you might say she was smart enough not to have me arrested. Of course, this was after she'd received a letter from an attorney suggesting this would not be a wise idea. But she also did not go to try to get an injunction to stop me, which is really what she needs to do, show that there's some real harm in what I'm doing. Otherwise, the police officer is interfering with my right to record. And the demonstration we put together was pretty makeshift. It was at the last minute. And it happened really because of a thing called Paula's Cottage that went on. And I think some listeners may be aware of that. A woman named Paula, her parents, who've long rented to her in an accessory dwelling unit that appears to be, through the pictures online, quite secure and well-managed and safe, is being criminalized, and her parents are being penalized, financially penalized, for having it, in spite of her attempting to redress the situation through the planning department, the planning commission, for almost the last 9 months. I interviewed her, and we may get to that interview in the course of the hour if I ever end this lengthy description of the city council meeting. And that was really what was, I thought there was going to be a large crowd there for Paula. There wasn't. There was a fairly small crowd, but there were some people who were there. Her mom was there. She was there. Some other neighbors and tenants were there. And she was there, and she was very eloquent, and she's it's covered in Santa Cruz Indy Media, if you want to go there. I think Bradley did a bit of a piece on it. In fact, I think I may play a little of it, because I think it's certainly relevant, though. Again, you can find it online, so there's not necessarily a need to. I think this is actually it's an earlier. Oh no, actually not. Let's see if we can play a little. Let's play a little of this and hear what Paula had to say.
Democratic culture or society, and not a.
Not a second. We want to make sure we're in the right neck of the woods. Okay, and here we go.
Inspection program, so he willingly did that. He just told me that an inspector would come, and so I allowed him in. The first thing he said was, you don't have a permit. He just kept telling me I live in a garage. In October of last year, 2013.
So then what?
So then he went around and, you know, continued his inspection, sorry, and he just said, I don't, you know, you guys need a window in this room, and we just had a space heater, so you need a portable, real heater. We're willing to do that, and my parents did that, but he just said, your lot size is zoned for just one home. You know, when my parents bought this property in 82, it was zoned for multi-units because there's cottages all over the neighborhood. Just, you know, and the front house is very small. We have a little cottage. We have a lot of yard all around us. So we had no, you know, whoa, the lot size is too small. We never thought so, you know. So they never gave us any option to legalize it legally. I mean, like, you have these safety issues, but you don't fall within the lot size, too bad. You need to turn it back into a garage.
So is this the first time you've come to...
I've been coming since then.
Maybe, right. Okay. So now you're...
Over Christmas, I was given a 30-day notice, like over Christmas time.
So what are you guys doing now?
We filed an appeal. We lost our appeal. I'm evicting. What I'm going to do now, if they don't issue a moratorium, I'm going to file a restraining order, civil restraining order against the city council for violating my basic civil rights, because I have tried every avenue of rationalizing, reasoning, appealing to their human nature, to their monetary, let's collect taxes from these homes. Let's legalize them. And then all the money they're spending on the tax force, they're just talking about, let's prevent homelessness in the first place by keeping our people in their homes. People are willing to do anything. There should be. This is a creative town with many, and we're into conservation. So that's what I don't understand, why there can't be some creativity within legalizing these unpermitted. I'm sorry they're unpermitted, but like decades ago, these homes weren't, the zoning ordinances weren't even being enforced. That's why my parents bought the home in the first place. So why is the rental inspection ordinance being used to enforce these zoning ordinances that the community does not have a problem with? My neighbors are in there right now, my immediate neighbors, telling them they love having us live there. They're going to be sad to see us go. No one, they're not helping anyone's quality of life. The rental inspection ordinance is supposed to be about improving people's quality of life. And if that is so, and we're willing to comply with any health and safety standards, why are they getting hung up on these lot size restrictions? And I believe they did away with the owner occupancy requirement, but that loop, that restriction already red tagged and evicted many people that were already in my shoes.
So what does, emotionally, what has this done?
Oh my God. Well, yeah, I'm getting all worked up right now.
Yeah.
Emotionally, it's very hard. Yeah, I'm seeing a therapist. I'm this close to getting my teaching credential, so I've had to put that on hold to become an advocate and a legal student to learn how these proceedings work. I've become, I am a substitute teacher. I'm too upset a lot of times to take jobs. As a teacher, you are a role model and you are expected, to not have a life. So
you're living your life.
And so with all the stress hanging over my head and just trying to.
So are you in that place right now? Or you?
No, we've been evicted.
So where have you
been red tagged?
And you're
staying with friends and my sister and not giving up. I'm not lying down. Even though they fined my parents I filed another appeal. My parents are old. My dad's 83. They didn't want to file another appeal. They're just like, hey, I'm sick of this. Let's just. They don't want to convert it, but they're tired of fighting. So I filed another appeal. The city didn't accept it because I'm only the tenant.
Okay, gotcha.
But even though it doesn't say anywhere in the zoning ordinance or anywhere,
so as far as like living somewhere else, is that just not in the cards right now? Is that
I'd have to move to San Jose. Right now I don't have a job, so I can't. My dad doesn't want to kick out the tenants in the front house, one who's speaking in there right now.
Okay.
So it's a whole ripple effect. That's an inspector said, well, why can't you just live in the front house?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens to those people?
Mm-hmm.
They can just move somewhere else. It takes a year. It's hard to find. I have a dog. I have a daughter. Single income. I'm not really working right now because I've been under so much stress. I'm going to have to go live with my sister.
Okay. All right. Thank you for talking to me.
Okay. All right.
Is there a way to reach you in the future?
Yeah. I'll give you my phone.
And that was Paula Gregoire. Her mother is also named Paula, and her daughter Isabella. If you go online to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org, and you can look at the story, Paula Gregoire, Save Paula's Cottage. She's also on the Facebook page, Save Paula's Cottage. And you'll probably hear some of me interviewing her later, too. I go into some stuff with her as well. Let's, however, now go back to some earlier interviews so I can get them off my chest and perhaps some phone calls from you. You can call in. If you're calling on September 11th, 2014, you will get through. and you'll be on the air, or I should say on the stream, and I will be able to talk to you. So let's hear some other stuff.
Some advice from an anonymous individual. What do you tell kids who, moms who CPS appears at the door?
A responsible parent, if you see CPS knock at your front door, grab your kids, head out the back, and don't look back because they are dangerous.
Thank you. You wish to reveal for our records who you are, sir?
I'm a parent who had his child kidnapped by CPS and came to learn they're totally dysfunctional.
Your motorcycle drowned out the last five syllables.
Well, I came to find out in talking with people in Child Protective Services is that there's all cover your ass, deflect, don't deal, deny, and they're dysfunctional. You know, there's nobody responsible there, nobody, totally lacking integrity. I feel sorry for any well-intended social workers who start there because they have to leave. They can't stay there.
Thank you. We have an expatriate from San Jose. Your name, sir?
Jackson Smith.
And are you new here?
I'm just out here with some friends right now.
And what are your thoughts comparing Santa Cruz with San Jose?
Santa Cruz is dope. I love it here. I love the good vibes. San Jose is full of a bunch of douchebags, I ain't gonna lie, but...
Are you a local from San Jose? Or?
Yep, and I love that city no matter what, though.
Really?
Not the people, though.
Born there yourself? Or?
Yes, sir.
Now, are you on the streets or indoors?
Lightweight, both.
A little both? And how is it for people on the streets in San Jose?
Honestly, it's not that bad. I mean, in San Jose, you can be homeless without really being homeless. I mean, they have great fucking opportunities. They got great opportunities like clothes drives. They got shelters everywhere. They got...
No hassles with police?
Oh, yeah, you got hassles with the police, but, I mean, mostly they're understanding.
Really?
Yeah, for the most part, depending where you go.
So you've gotten citations yourself?
No, I have not.
And we've been talking with...
Thank you, man. I'm talking with Jackson Smith.
Thanks, Jason. So we're talking with...
My name is Dan.
Dan, you say a tree fell in Santa Cruz?
I think that some workers damaged a vehicle towards the 7-Eleven.
7-Eleven on Chestnut?
Yeah, yeah.
There are three of them in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it's over by Chestnut, and I saw a damaged vehicle with some chopped up tree limbs next to it, meaning probably some incompetency.
Now, have you been hassled by police at all?
No, sir. I'm having a great day.
And are you outside yourself?
Most of the time, yes, sir.
And no hassles when you're sleeping?
Ooh, good one. Except for other homeless people that claim that I'm in their spot sometimes.
How long have you been outside?
I came into town from Jacksonville Beach. It's been 3 years.
Have things changed in these 3 years?
Yeah, I saw the new pour that they did on the sidewalk by the by the effing wharf with all the fake jellyfish and stuff.
Sorry, I don't mean to catch you while you're eating here. What about in terms of how folks outside are treated? Any change there?
I think they're fine.
Okay. And again, we've been talking with?
Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
Any street reports?
I don't record, man.
What's your name, Mr. Sleep Criminal?
Sleeping Invisible Dave.
And Invisible Guy, what happened? How did you lose your protective shield?
It wore off a day early.
And who, in fact, what officer saw you and then quickly rushed in to give you a ticket?
I don't know. He just knew me.
You mean you didn't even determine the identity of this man who pierced your shield?
I see the name on the ticket. I've seen the name. Aguilar?
Aguilar. Is it Aguilar or Aguilara? Well, I'm sure which one of the two.
I saw the name, so I know.
Were you, in fact, sleeping near this individual? Is there some kind of a relationship here?
I wasn't there. I get up early. I avoid tickets.
So you, too, are a criminal sleeper outside.
I am. I got at least 2 hours.
2 hours of sleep a night. That's why your eyes look so puffy. I can see the whites of your eyes, actually. Yes.
That's good news.
Yes. Well, how many tickets have you now gotten for sleeping yourself?
Probably.
And have you ever paid off these questionable tickets?
Nope.
And have you ever suffered any either warrants or fines because of...
Back in the 80s.
But not recently?
Convictions for failure to appear.
But now they're not doing the FDAs, right?
I don't know.
But the police have not grabbed you by the scruff of the neck and...
They tell me I'm a good guy.
You're a good guy, but you're just not allowed to sleep at night. Well, you know, we don't want to carry niceness too far here. What about you? What do you have? You been you've been ticketed for any of this stuff?
No.
A low profile. Anything you want to say about this issue?
I think it's crazy.
That's my word too. And we've been talking with?
No. I'm anonymous.
Anonymous and
Invisible Dave.
Invisible Dave.
Thank you both.
So we're talking with
Louis Mejia.
And Louis, we're here at the Red Church, and it's the 8th of September, 2014. And you have an account.
Well, it's not really much of an account. It's just more of a vibe. You know, it's I've been here in Santa Cruz now for a few months, and I understand the situation that causes the police officers to react to any one individual in a certain fashion, maybe a defensive or curious fashion. But I found it that unlike any other city that I lived in before, Los Angeles, San Diego, Dallas, that here, more than one officer, they kind of look and they try to place you in their mind and just give you this long look that is just very unfriendly.
It's a profile. It's all right. They want to make sure you're not one of them criminals like everybody else.
Yeah, you know, and I'm biking along the levee. I got my helmet on. You know, I smile. I wave. I try to be very friendly, and they just give me this really hard.
It's a little dark. You know, you got to get a whiter skin. Okay. Work on
that. Yeah, you know, and I'm groomed. You know, I don't.
Shoes are rather tattered, man.
But yeah, I think it's very unfriendly of them to be giving those long, hard looks to someone who's not doing anything but moving along.
Well, they're trying to make it, it's a smart approach to dealing with the homeless. You want to kind of make it uncomfortable for those who should know better and should be on their way.
Yeah, but it seems that they're doing this even to the average everyday citizen that has no reason to be profiled or be accosted. You know, I can see why they would want to do that to somebody who clearly looks up to something or up to no good. You know, possibly, or maybe somebody that they have dealt with in the past. You know, that they have multiple arrests. But I'm just a person. You know, I work.
You look like you might be like somebody else, similar. And besides, you have an accent of a certain kind.
Yeah, that is true. Although you can't tell my accent when I'm riding the bike. But you know, I'm a federal employee. You know, I pay my taxes.
Some of these police officers are pretty sharp.
I deserve to be treated with some respect. And if I'm asking for that treatment, I expect it also for everybody.
Have you gotten any citations here in Santa Cruz?
No, I haven't. But I'm sure they would.
Well, work harder.
I'm sure they would be more than happy to provide me with one if I just happen to step out of line. But I
cross my
T's and I dot my I's.
And we've been talking to, or listening to,
Louis Mejia.
Thanks, Louis. Any reports from your side of the aisle?
Nothing.
You were at the AFC conference. Any highlights that really particularly struck you there?
These are interviews that I took on Monday from the Calvary Episcopal Church, the Red Church, at the 5 o'clock meal there where we often go. At Friday there was, I did some other interviews, which I may be able to drag out on Sunday. I'm not sure if they're worth dragging out, but perhaps they are. I think I mentioned it probably in the Sunday broadcast when I was here. But the American Association of Faith Communities that met on Friday had an endless roster of church speakers, and then a room where I guess Huff set up a table and a bunch of other social service providers did, and we did a little cross-chatting with each other, a little petitioning. I was circulating a petition for encampment protection support. And if you're interested in supporting people in encampments, I don't necessarily mean kicking down money, but in Fresno, what they do is they are, first of all, witnesses. If there's police harassment, they pool resources to try to find porta-potties and garbage pickups or try to get grants for that kind of thing. And there is an actual, I don't know if it's an organization or just Mike Rhodes, that tries to support the encampments there that are well established, or they were. I think they've been broken up in the last 6 months, but they're probably reforming. They're always reforming, as they are in Santa Cruz. And while I'm a critical I'm certainly a supporter of campgrounds almost of any kind that provide some kind of low-income or no-income place to sleep for poor and homeless people. And that includes sanctuary villages and sanctuary camps and similar things. I think what we have to, the first priority for me is support of people right now who are facing civil rights violations, hence my pressure on the local American Civil Liberties Union to take actions, which is still pretty slow in doing. It did pass, after repeated pressure, a resolution by Steve Plaich, the vice chair, to have a moratorium on all anti-camping laws at night. And Steve Plaich did go to the Board of Supervisors, and I don't know if he showed up at City Council. I don't think he did show up at City Council on Tuesday. Maybe he's biding his time. Who knows? Or the ACLU is biding their time. Ron Pomerantz, I would say to his discredit, didn't represent the ACLU in supporting the downtowners underwriting punitive police enforcement, or the DAP program, the DUPE program, as I call it. He was a big supporter. But again, he had the idea at the City Council, he was also there on Tuesday, that the real objective, and a positive objective and a good objective, is to provide people with other options. Even, I guess he would say, to force them into other options. That's another issue. But he didn't go into the civil liberties aspects of it, which I found unfortunate, considering his support for other civil liberties issues as a member of the American Civil Liberties Union. Again, these are interviews that you're listening to now from the Red Church this last Monday. And let's hear some more.
No, not particularly. It was a great conference.
You didn't fall asleep after the long-winded speeches of the... We're talking about the...
This is Scott Galloway, who is a regular worker at the Red Church, and he was a speaker, actually, at this Friday Association of Faith Communities, and he and I have had various exchanges. This is one coming up where there's a few sparks exchanged.
Association of Affiliated Churcharama. What do we call this?
You're referring to the Association of Faith Communities conference on September 5th, 2014.
Correct.
Which had some really significant speeches in it by some really significant people in the community. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we didn't get to the part which I was really looking forward to, which was the community dialogue portion. And that was...
Sounds like a Brent Adams event. He always has a similar problem.
Well, it was a timed agenda. And there was time if people had stayed within the time limits.
In fact, what Scott is referring to is that the folks pumping their own programs and making their own speeches from the church programs, this pastor, that pastor, and so forth, used up all the time, and those folks, like people from Huff and other organizations, and individual homeless people, got zero time to speak. Which, of course, is not unusual, but it's a sort of a sad thing, considering the Red Church has really been a leader to some extent, or maybe I've just regarded it as a leader. Maybe it's not, because I go to their Monday things and interview people there, and I get to make an occasional five-minute speech about what's coming up at City Council and what's coming up at the next American Civil Liberties Union meeting and encourage people to go and so forth. I've always thought of the Red Church as a progressive kind of group, and in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't, too. Anyway, let's hear some more.
You're going to crack your whip from the audience.
I'm not the whip guy. I'm the audiovisual guy.
You were very close. You could have said, hey, get the hook.
You were closer than I was.
Only briefly.
You had a recorder there.
I didn't. In fact, I'm surprised you didn't
record the whole thing.
No. I recorded Steve. His full name is...
Which Steve?
The not the Styles guy, but the other one.
Steve DeFeels Gambrell.
Steve DeFeels Gambrell. It was a good speech. Again, the problem is, it lacked specifics about particular events in Santa Cruz, which I always regret that they don't discuss.
Keep in mind, what Pastor Steve was doing was delivering a keynote address, and that preceded some important presentations by other people who were going to get down to specifics.
Did anyone get down to specifics about abuses against homeless people in Santa Cruz?
That wasn't the theme.
No,
the
it certainly was.
The real theme of the conference was to try to get the faith communities together to network with one another and work on solutions to dealing with folks who are homeless and try to find a way of providing an increased level of
dealing with folks who are harassing the homeless. That would be an interesting conference to have. And that's one that you have yet to get into.
Well, you have to remember that churches are nonprofit organizations that are motivated by trying to help people. They're not necessarily operating from...
Churches aren't interested in justice? Actors. Martin Luther King wasn't interested in justice? Come on, man.
Justice is a very important element, but...
Not in this conference it wasn't.
That wasn't the purpose of the conference. The purpose of the conference was to try to get faith communities together to network, to meet one another, and to increase our level of services.
Doesn't it sort of seem to you a little cynical on the backs of the homeless to try to sort of make publicity for churches? I mean, to me, it's a sort of... It has a sour quality as I think about it, unless you're really trying to address the problems. And I know at a certain level you are. You're a sincere individual. You've worked on this... how many years have you worked on these issues?
A few years.
A few years. But, you know... This seemed like a bunch of church leaders promoting their own churches and showing themselves off, including council members and others. And I think this is shown by the fact that you had no dialogue with homeless people. I don't know, did you have any homeless speakers?
We did have a homeless person who was invited to speak. She unfortunately was not able to come. I didn't find out till the day before.
Well, it's amazing that you would have such a long line of people using homelessness as their theme without having any actual people there. There probably were a few hanging out. You could have found someone who's homeless. You here today at the church, there are, you know, many you recognize. You could have said, hey, you want to say something about this?
Well, you know, Robert, in all fairness, a big part of the conference was trying to get a dialogue between the county planning process and the Smart Solutions movement and the churches to allow the churches to see what is on the horizon in the way of community priorities for services to homelessness, the Housing First Initiative, essentially.
You need to translate that into English. That sounds like gobbledygook.
The Housing First Initiative is an attempt to actually house people. You've heard of the 180.
Right. Without requiring that they be clean and sober. Now, how many churches actually allow that? I know the ISSP program does, as long as you are not so intoxicated that you're throwing up all over the place and breaking windows, right?
Well, we don't allow people who are under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
At all?
Well, that's determined by somebody being evidently under the influence. We're not going to drug test people, obviously.
Good. Well, maybe the next step?
Yeah. No. No.
Well, it's got to be security in this community, son.
Well, there is.
You're going to allow these cranksters to run around and infiltrate your program?
Well, I think the problems of addiction in the community are a big problem. And we need to address that by having programs that people can find accessibility to. The big problem is people that want to get treatment can't get it.
We know that. So why does it have to be said 30 times over the course of 3 years with no meaningful changes? I'm not aware that there's been any expansion of programs. Perhaps you are aware of such an expansion.
Well, I'm not aware of an expansion of programs, but I'm aware of a need to expand programs. And I'm aware of programs that are working very hard just to maintain the level of
chairs on the Titanic.
Just working very hard to keep the programs going that they currently have. Funding is tough for these.
Oh, the police are getting lots of funding.
Who are?
The police department, the Parks and Rec, the private security guards, the people who are doing the downtown accountability project that is taking, is simply getting rid of people that they call them most vulnerable, but they're actually simply most objectionable to merchants and others downtown. So I find it not just a waste of time, but somewhat deceptive when church groups, you know, engage in these back-padding activities with each other. And I understand it would be very nice if you actually had a meaningful change or exchange of individuals about, you know, this issue of Housing First, if you're actually going to do something about it. I talked to you 3 months ago about, you know, doing protests in front of empty buildings. Oh, no, you said backing away. Nothing like that. And so you have plenty of empty buildings, but you have no interest in drawing the attention of the city to the fact that they're there. And meanwhile, outside, homeless people continue to be harassed. And you continue to say, woe is me, that's a real pity, I wish it weren't happening. At least, not you. Yes, you. But also the entire group that you're working with. And that's the problem.
Well, the entire group I'm working with are trying very hard to work with the people who make decisions in this community to make those decisions the most meaningful decisions they can be and to actually solve some problems.
You mean to beg and plead and get crumbs from the people who make
things? How long have you been protesting? You can protest.
We have created the programs around here. That's
protest,
the point.
And protest and protest and that's necessary.
Yeah,
and that's necessary.
Yeah,
but it's also necessary to have people that are working with the government to try to find a solution and to change the way...
How effective has that been in the last 3 years?
I think the Smart Solutions Movement is a really significant thing in this community.
It created one extra unit of housing in this
community. Yeah, how about the 180-180 program, which came out of that effort, and that's...
What did they create that was not already there?
Well, housing for 210 people, I think.
Not, yeah, they got housing vouchers, when moving some folks to the front of the line and dropping people who had been waiting years further back. Is that not the case?
I don't know how that works.
You should figure it out, because
all
it's
I can
important.
Tell you is, obviously, there's a limited number of housing vouchers out there, but the priority right now of the 180-220 program is to try to be able to offer every chronically homeless person in this community
propaganda.
House, a place to live by the year 2020.
And indeed, one of the speeches that we were trying to give it, as you saw, our speech was 1,000 units of simple housing. And we're not talking about, you know, fancy vouchers. We have to run around to landlords and beg and
plead. One of our hopes also is that we're going to be able to get churches to develop low-income housing. There's a church doing this right now, developing low-income housing.
Okay, maybe you should be more... Well, you know, this is an interesting subject, and I do want to hear more about it. Unfortunately, I got to give away some of these flyers. So
Give away flyers.
And we've been talking with...
That's Scott Galloway guy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott. And thank you for your patience.
Sure.
This is Julie Shaw with Santa Cruz Full-Timers on Facebook groups.
You also have two full-time doggies.
Three dog night.
Well, only two of them are visible, though.
Yeah, we're hiding the other red one, the little red dog right down there. Ah. Yeah, he's resting. Okay, so anyway, here's the scoop. There is a new policy at McDonald's where you have to move along after 30 minutes, and the management is at discretion over who they want to move along. There was an elderly couple, some seniors, a World War II vet, who was told to move along from McDonald's, who wrote an editorial to a newspaper in which a local steakhouse, a barbecue place, not in Santa Cruz, this is back east, I believe, blessed this man and his wife with a lifetime supply of free dinners as a result of being moved along from McDonald's. I notified the AARP about this move-along policy. And they,
Association of Retired Persons?
Correct. And they wrote me back that they're going to be monitoring the situation, but they're not going to be taking any action at this time. I encourage anybody who's been told to move along from any of the McDonald's in Santa Cruz, Capitola, and the one on Ocean Street, Mission Street, and the one on 41st Avenue, I encourage them to contact Robert Norris with Huff or Santa Cruz Full-Timers. I'd like to keep track of how many people are told to move along, and if anyone could keep their receipts, that would be helpful as well.
How can we reach the full-timers?
We're located at facebook.com/groups/Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
Okay. You know, I actually was part of a protest in Santa Barbara in 1992 where the actual McDonald's tried the same thing. They were discriminating against homeless people. We simply did a sit-in there and they changed their policy. Of course, we had a lot of people doing it.
So I think this is going to be something that we want to watch, just like the AARP is doing. I encourage people to just kind of keep their eyes and ears open to the situation and just kind of monitor it.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Norris. I'm Julie Shaw, Santa Cruz Full-Timers.
Thanks, Julie.
Now, a good reporter would have been sensible enough to say, yes, this happened at McDonald's in some other city somewhere far away, for which received some publicity, and she's now... I think, appropriately trying to find out what's going on at our local McDonald's. I think I actually have heard something about the local McDonald's, but I don't have a clear recollection or memory of that and who told it to me, when and where, and so forth. So I had thought I think I may have to pull back a little bit here and say I'm not clear that local McDonald's are, although I have the recollection that the one on Ocean Street has apparently been telling people, giving them time limitations. And I would join Julie Shaw of Santa Cruz Full-Timers to encourage people to call Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. If you have experienced this or know about it in a credible way, you've actually seen the policy posted, seen it being told to certain people there, or a friend of yours who you believe is credible and accurate in their account has told you this has happened to them or someone they know. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio at the stream, freakradio.org. Call in number here, 427-3772. No, we're not going to let Mickey on the air. Hang on there for a second.
I'm being told that Wednesday the Homeless Lack of Services Center will begin to be the homeless. We exclude you from Services Center by installing the so-called security gate. Is that right?
Okay.
The IDs, of course, you were saying. Have they actually given you IDs yet?
No, not yet. You do an intake, and then they have the ID ready for you on Monday.
I know that they're getting an extension from City Council tomorrow. In the afternoon, they're going to be voting on allowing them to have more time to put this in because they're being threatened with the withdrawal of a small part of their money if they don't go along with this program. So that's what I've heard. It's on the council agenda. The shelter, there's an alarm as well, you're telling me. Is it in the morning this goes off?
Or? This morning.
And it's the first time that's happened?
First time I've happened.
You're in a shelter client at one time, yeah. Okay.
But it's that, I mean, I almost immediately start to get a headache.
Okay. Although that's just is useful information, any other thoughts or anything else you want to pass on? Okay. You want to say who you are? No. But thank you, though.
How did it go? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? You had, like, something going on almost every night, and I wanted to go, and I kept forgetting it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you got things you got to do, and you got places to be. Well, there's a thing tomorrow night, you know.
For one of them.
City Council. And there's a Huff meeting on Wednesday, if you want to come to it. What else? Tell us again what happened. Kicked out of a storage facility?
Yeah, for being there too long. Can't be hanging out while I was in...
Which storage facility was? Can you...
Statewide.
And how... Are you a client? Or are you a visitor?
No, I have a
paid client.
Well, yeah.
And did they kick you out in the sense they said, leave? Or in the sense that they're saying, we won't serve you anymore. We're going to take your storage and kick all your storage out.
I've been... warned. I'm unable to locate some documents that I need to find.
Right. What time of day or night do they kick you out?
Oh, it was about 7.
And what are their hours? What are they allowed?
I'm allowed business hours, 9 to 6. I guess it was close to 6. I don't know. I don't know what time.
You're just a bad woman. You know what you are. You're just very bad.
Yeah, so she's... The manager comes up and she's huffing and puffing and then she goes, well, you know, you're not really bothering anybody. But then she hands me a letter and slaps her lock on my ear.
The letter was a warning.
I never even opened it because I was trying to get out of there. And when I left, I realized that I must have tossed it in the storage because I didn't have it with me.
So you don't even know what the letter said. Well, I wish you luck with that. And we've been talking with a strawberry-eating woman here. Or actually, your fingers are covered with cream cheese, and you better watch your step. Thank you. So I'm talking with... So we're talking with...
Kelly.
And Kelly, I was just giving announcements about the upcoming kind of pre-City Council get-together that some of us are having in front of City Council on tomorrow, on Tuesday, the 9th. And you had some information of your own that you spoke about.
Yes. Right now, the Sycamore Grove area up on Highway 9 has grown very hot. Just Sunday morning, Saturday or Sunday morning, I was singled out and ticketed for sleeping in my vehicle, although there were 5 other vehicles there. They singled me out because my vehicle was unregistered. They're trying to take my truck away. They've been trying to take it away for a year now. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Sycamore Grove, public or private property?
Well, Sycamore Grove has an address, but I don't know if it's private property or not. I do know that there are signs that say the area is closed. If you enter it, you're in violation of a Santa Cruz Municipal Code. It is some kind of park.
Public property.
It may be public property, yes.
And what time did they give you this warning citation ticket?
They actually gave it to me at 7:30 in the morning after the park opened. A time I wasn't even asleep. I was just hiding in my car.
They gave it to you, rangers, cops?
It was city police.
You know the names of the cops?
You know, I don't want to be mistaken and blame the wrong officer.
And just technically speaking, the sleeping ban extends from 11 o'clock at night to 8:30 in the morning on all public and much private property, even in your own vehicle, even if it's legally parked on public property. But not if you're sitting in your vehicle or hiding in your vehicle but not sleeping. So it sounds like if she's accurate in this regard, she was given threatened improperly with a sleeping ticket if she wasn't sleeping.
They were very nice. I mean,
they nicely gave you some nasty ticket.
They nicely gave me a nasty ticket, but they didn't treat me badly, is what I'm saying. They didn't rough me up or anything.
Tickets will rough you up.
But the tickets will definitely
be rough. They can be very nice to you.
And then I just got a ticket for non-registration from the sheriff on in the city limits. So I've been basically put on notice that they know I'm there and I'm not going to be safe no matter where I go.
How long has your vehicle not been registered, if you wish to say?
8 months.
And have you had this kind of encounter with police before and generally not been cited, or what's the situation been like?
Back in August of last year, because I hadn't had the money to register it, it got abated all the way down to almost halfway to Monterey, down to Half Moon Bay. I had to get it back. And they put a boot on it right before Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, when they could have done it a week earlier. And they're trying to take it away.
You got it back by paying off all your tickets or by jacking off the boot? How did you do it?
Well, I did ask two very nice young men to please don't take the boot off the truck, but they ignored me because they knew that if they didn't come to my aid, in spite of my resistance, that I would lose the truck. And
So, since that time, though, your vehicle has been on the highways and byways generally without being molested or frequently molested?
It is only bothered when it's parked. It's only bothered when it's parked. I hardly ever drive it because I'm not looking for trouble.
You live in it.
I live in it.
So, this is your first set of citations since that November incident?
Yes, it is.
And you've generally been here most nights in the Santa Cruz city limits or thereabouts?
Or thereabouts, yes. But with this ticket in the Santa Cruz city limits from a Santa Cruz sheriff's deputy, they're putting me on notice that there's no safe place for me to go.
So you also mentioned that this seems to be Sycamore Grove is also going to be a forbidden zone. Other people, I mean, for example, have others decided not to use that area because of what happened to you? You said there were other vehicles they were ignoring because they were registered, even though you got a ticket for sleeping, you got a ticket for unregistered vehicle, or both?
He said, I'm going to do you a favor and I'm not going to cite you for an unregistered vehicle. And then the sheriff's department came by and did it 2 or 3 days later.
But he did ticket you for sleeping?
He did ticket me for sleeping, yes.
So I think, again, this is advice to listeners who are outside or in their vehicles. Go get on the waiting list at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, because if you are, the city is required, the law says, to dismiss all sleeping and camping tickets. So you just go over in there, get a copy of your application. You don't have to use any of their services. Just sign up for the waiting list and keep that with you.
I would advise that, yeah.
Do you have that?
I am on the waiting list. I have been on the waiting list. In fact, I had a bed at around Christmas time, and I gave it to somebody who I felt needed it more. As as a kindness at Christmas.
Well, remember, if you get on the waiting list, it doesn't keep anybody else from taking it. It just means you're on that list along with us. Yeah, I mean, you can decline to go into that, into the shelter at that point. That gives that person, you know, your space. But stay on the waiting list is my advice. Did you show the police officer your papers or tell him you were on the waiting list in the Sycamore Grove incident?
I did tell him, yes. He seemed to just kind of go, okay, yeah, and nod his head.
He acknowledged that was a basis for not giving you a ticket?
He didn't acknowledge that it was not a basis. In fact, he did something that he should not have done. He opened up his collapsible baton and stuck it in the window of my vehicle, and he shoved aside a barricade, a curtain that I had up that would have obstructed his view completely into the vehicle, which is a violation of my civil rights. It's also, I went to school to be a cop. You do not do that. What you can see, you can see. What you cannot see is just too bad.
Did he ask you if he could search your vehicle?
No, he didn't.
Did you say don't do that?
I didn't say don't do that.
But he should have known.
But he knows.
It's always good to make it clear. Officer, you don't have my permission to push anything aside or look in my vehicle. That you should. That's a good thing to do. Again, it's easy for me to say, but I'm not sitting here with a cop threatening to take my vehicle or hassle me. That's something you can consider saying.
And also, if she was not in violation of the sleeping law, because A, she wasn't sleeping, and B, she told the police officer she was on the waiting list, and he didn't check or had, and or he, if he believed her, if he didn't dispute that, then he had no basis for making any kind of a search whatsoever. If she is violating the law, he can search the immediate area, I believe. Although, I don't know about her vehicle. Perhaps her vehicle, too. An interesting question. If any of you legal experts have more information, let me know. But, again, she wasn't sleeping, and she had already told the officer she was on the waiting list, and there was, and he wasn't disputing that fact, then he had no basis for any kind of further conversation with her if she didn't want to talk to him, or further activity in her area involving her personal property. That's my uninformed lay view.
It would be grounds to be thrown out of court. I could have it thrown out of court on those grounds, even if I were not on the list.
You mentioned some other items, that other things that you have, bits of information for folks here at the who are in a similar situation. What else did you want to mention?
Recently, let's see, today's Monday. I believe it was Saturday afternoon on Highway 9, we had a police presence of three police cars and two sheriff's cars, and they went dashing off towards the river through the forest. Apparently, from what I understand from people who were running out, there was a similar police presence coming in from the other side of the river as well. They say someone phoned in a bunch of screaming and hollering, like someone was, the caller was fearful someone was being harmed. That's the story we got. But we were there. We didn't hear anything. And the only thing down there was a family with their children playing in the water.
Do we know what the outcome of this police activity was?
They stopped at least one woman on a felony search, a mandatory felony search, but they didn't bother anybody else. In fact, two officers came from the other side of the river. I was walking into the forest. She comes running out and says, "There's sheriffs in there." I thought they'd left. I turned around and started running away, too. And she hits the road, and she's taking off. I'm heading for my car, and they chased her down, and they pulled her over, and sat her on the ground, and they went through everything she had on her.
Did she have a probation or parole condition to search
for? It was a mandatory search, a felony search.
Charming.
But she was trying to escape. They had already run her ID and let her go once. And then these cops come from the other side of the river and chase her down to the highway.
Double trouble.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to report?
On Wednesday, I believe it will be the 10th. It'll certainly be the day after tomorrow, if I understand the signage correctly. There will be no parking allowed in up and down parts of Highway 9. I don't know how far up, and I'm not sure where it begins, but I would advise that people not be there that day, not be there the night prior.
Thank you for that bad news for those who are looking for places to park by the side of the road. We've been talking with
Kelly.
Anything else, Kelly?
Yes, possibly. Let's go off the record for a second.
So here's a pitch.
I have a nice Chevy truck, and the police, the tow companies, everybody is just dying to lay their hands on it. Anybody who's feeling generous, if you could please send a donation to Kelly in care of.
You can contact me at 423-4833, and you can bring it to the Huff meeting, which is Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock in the morning at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, or you can send it to Huff at 309 Cedar PMB 14B Santa Cruz 95060. And if you didn't get all that, call me at 423 Huff, and I'll give you the whole address again.
Yeah.
How much money are you looking for?
Well, if I were to count all the tickets, it would be about $700. I'm just trying to register it, and I just want to get legal so they can't hassle me and they can't take it away, because it's a nice truck and they want it, and they've been trying to take it for a year now. First they abated it down to Moss Landing, now they're ticketing it and letting me know that they know that I'm there, and I already had one cop say, if I catch you on the road, I'm going to tow it because you're 8 months out of registration.
You need to park it on private property somewhere.
If someone has private property I could park it on, I would be most grateful.
So that's the story from Kelly. Give us a call at 423-HUFF, or if you want to call on air, 427-3772, if you're hearing this on a day when the show is being streamed. So thank you, Kelly.
Thank you very much.
In fact, we're talking now with
Father Joe, who has to go home for dinner.
How about a quick 3-minute walk you to your car, perhaps?
I'm walking right here. So.
That's a nice-looking little car. What's your general analysis of how things went at the conference?
Great spirit.
No homeless people talking?
Well, it was to hear from the people that are serving and to generate some cooperation with all the different agencies that don't often get together.
What do you anticipate coming out of this? Or do you have any sense of that yet, or are you still kind of feeling it out? Where are you going with that bowl of strawberries?
I'm going to my wife. I think it's a beginning. I mean, you kind of have to see what the conversations with all the different agencies are. I was very happy Judge Deneen Guy was here to see how we can collaborate with the agencies.
A pie for Guy, that's what I say. But that's another story.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. People who are abusive is. I think she's abusive to homeless people. She has a very negative view. You probably read her in the paper.
I don't have that impression.
No, really? Well, maybe she's changed.
Yeah. Well, I just know her from having lunch with her and her interest in doing something different than giving tickets and jail sentence. So, you know, I'm hopeful that there'll be more collaboration, not only with non-government agencies, but also with faith-based agencies. And they were well represented there, and so that was a good sign. The first, okay. It's definitely the biggest one we've done. So,
and next one will be next year, or do you have some follow-up thing happening?
Well, we're hopeful to have a candidates forum again.
With, that will be
in October. Steve Plaich is organizing that, actually.
Yeah.
So,
the non-candidate, often the perennial candidate, Steve Plaich?
Right. He's not a candidate this year, so.
He's wised up, I think, after a number of experiences. Thank you for stopping longer than you said.
You're about 3 minutes.
You got 3 minutes. Have you been talking with?
Father Joel.
Thanks, Father Joel.
Right.
And there's actually a candidate kickoff shindig at the Pono Grill, or is it the Pomo Grill? I don't know. It's the old Java House, for those who've been around for decades, on Union Street. I think it's tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, 6 to 8, something like that, or maybe 5 to 7. It's Cynthia Chase, the Sandy City Council candidate, is doing a shindig, and I suspect it's open to the public if you're interested.
A little music outside the Red Church. It's about 7 o'clock. Let's listen to this man strum. Talking to that broadcaster from Free Radio and activist.
I do the Street People's Radio.
And your name, sir, is?
Karma.
Okay, Karma. And when is your show?
It's on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock until 2:30.
Unfortunately, we're not broadcasting, but you can get it on the computer by going to freakradio.org. I think they're actually, you can now download it directly from freakradio.org.
Well, I'm not much of a techie. You showed me how to do it one time, but I couldn't remember till
not very good either, Daryl.
Yeah. So, anyway, what I talk about on the program is a different view. It's one based more upon experience as a homeless person than as an administrator of funding or something like that. What I advocate is rather than managing homelessness, that the homeless people be kind of worked with so that the homeless so we can manage our own affairs for only about 1 year, and then after that we could be on our own doing the heavy lifting of getting ourselves off the streets and into our own affordable housing.
Yeah.
And this would also include having eco villages, building a model that could be replicated nationwide.
Now, this has been something you've been pressing for a couple of years now.
I've been actually pushing this about 15 years, but this could go
here in Santa Cruz a couple of years.
Here in Santa Cruz, but about 15 years. But
what kind of reaction are you getting here in Santa Cruz? And what do you think are the necessary steps to getting this done?
The reactions I get, I think, are really limited in a willingness to understand or participate in bringing forward what amounts to an exit strategy from homelessness. Usually the people I talk to about it are more interested in their narrower concerns. Usually our advocates, for instance, generally speaking, seem to be speaking more...
Of me, perhaps?
Our advocates, for lack of a better word, seem to generally be speaking about for the interest of the agencies or the viewpoint that they represent. I think mine is unique in that it's a way that addresses the needs of the whole of society, not just street people. We pay our own way, we get ourselves off the street through our own initiative, and we just need some support, to help us part the legal waters, you might say, for about a year, and after within that year, we
how
should have
homeless
our
people reacted to this, Daryl? How are you doing?
Generally speaking, I get strong support from homeless people, from the general public, even law enforcement.
Well, I know you were holding regular meetings for a while.
I keep trying, but not many people show up.
Yeah.
There's a different method.
That's like not strong support.
Well, it's not like you can say, come next Tuesday at 2 o'clock, and people are going to remember. We're a population who generally doesn't have much of a schedule.
But there's city council tomorrow. Are you going to be coming to speak to the community there? Or?
No, that's not really a concern of mine. Other people seem to be taking that approach, but I think that there's a another way that we can do this. And this is by the legitimacy of the way I propose a 16-point plan. Some of you may be familiar
with
it.
Where can people find this? Because I don't want to, frankly, hear all 16 points now. But they, can, of course, can't hear your show, which is at 1 o'clock on Wednesdays. But is there a place where it's written down where people can go to view it?
No, like I said, I'm not much of a techie guy. Even when I try to make a Facebook, I run into all...
You better get it together, Daryl.
I keep on trying. See, what I did, I went to our advocates, and I told them of my plan. I sought their help. Well, I think they picked up on some of my energy, some of my ideas, but they're not going to help us bootstrap ourselves. They seem, like I say, they seem to be more dedicated toward their particular interests.
Anything happened to you in the last week that you want to pass on?
I got diagnosed. I have cataracts, and also
you're wearing dark glasses.
That's right. And I also I have a foot problem, and my sciatica is coming back. I've been trying to find a place.
Anything
to sleep.
In terms of homeless experiences?
This is homeless experience.
Okay.
So I'm an older homeless person.
So you have these problems.
A lot of money,
indeed,
to avoid the fundamental issue of building the affordable housing, which I propose in the 16-point plan, but I can't get my message out or the support I need.
I see you're trying right now very hard.
I do. I put a lot of effort into
this. I'm going to leave it here unless we have something new, because we have gone through this before, you know, Daryl.
Yeah,
and I have had the same conversation
for years.
Right, and I've been doing it with you, but what I'd like to do is, you know, because this is for people who want to hear, frankly, and I know it's sort of novelty bullshit, but people want to hear something new. Is there anything new you want to pass on to us?
I think that I got a little bit more new information out this time than I had previously gotten. Usually the conversation that I have to offer is cut off
now,
between about 2 minutes.
Did you get to this Association of Faith Communities thing that was held here a couple days ago?
The scope that's generally been approached over the last quarter of a century is...
I'm asking if you got to the meeting. Sorry.
I'd like to answer it in my way,
okay,
please. The scope that matters have been approached in the last quarter of a century is kind of narrow and limited, so I don't have much interest in going to a lot of these conferences and other things. It's a lot of the same people who have not had success. I advocate a way that...
Did you go to the meeting, yes or no? I'm sorry. I'm not interested in simply giving you a forum to speak at lib. You have a forum. I would like some answers to questions I pose to you. And I'm not trying to be cruel. I'm trying to be relevant here, Daryl. I mean, you know, you can say this other stuff, but the reason I asked you this is, did you have any reaction if you went? Because I don't remember if I saw you.
I'm uncomfortable with the level of dialogue. It's not very sophisticated.
Right. No, I'm not saying you should.
I think I offer a higher level.
Well, I don't like them much either. I'm just wondering if you went to that meeting.
No.
Good. You probably were more sensible than I was. I went there and I spent too much time there. But on the other hand...
This is why I push a
higher level. I think we're going to leave it there. I'll give you the last word. Go ahead.
This is why I push a higher level of discourse. This is what I'm saying. These meetings have not been that productive. It's the same people trying again. They are people who don't have an insider's view of what's going on. I have this. I have a pretty sophisticated view.
And if you want to hear more about that, check Daryl's show out at 1 o'clock.
That's right.
On
radio.
Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. Thank you, Daryl.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ron.
And that's 1 o'clock on Wednesdays, I believe, at freakradio.org.
Well, we're talking with...
Michelle Parker.
So, Michelle, you say that you had some difficulties with the local constabulary?
Yes, that's 100% true. Mm-hmm. They follow me everywhere I go. They stand in places that I'm not aware until I notice that someone's staring at me, and most of the time it's somebody of authority.
Mm-hmm. Are these mostly men, male authority figures? Are there also women who are doing this who are in uniform?
It's also women in uniform, yes. Mm-hmm. And it just, I mean, there's more men, of course, probably than women in those
right.
types of jobs, but...
And we are almost at the end of Bathroom Spears. Broadsides coming up quickly as Uncle Dennis is from the cream to the dregs. For those, again, who are interested in the Berkeley protest rally, fight back rally, actually, not just a protest, but a fight back for the rights of tenants, street people, homeless folks, against corporations and big business and, you know, other folks who are so impacted, workers generally, that's Saturday in People's Park in Berkeley. Looks like I'm going up. I don't know if we actually have a caravan together. If you are interested in going to this thing and you either have a vehicle and you are willing to, you know, maybe split expenses or want to come along with or without a vehicle, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and do that tonight, because otherwise I may just go up early and do what I need to do to get up there and stay overnight. Otherwise, I'll be doing something on Saturday and perhaps doing a little vehicle caravanning. I've gotten one bite so far, and we'll see if we get more. Thank you for listening to the show. There is one final, a rather gloomy segment I'm going to play, which you may have already heard. It's rather notorious. At least a couple people at the Huff meeting yesterday had heard it. Santa Cruz installs anti-loitering noise boxes along San Lorenzo River levee. Let's hear that report from, I think it's, is it KOIN or KION or KSBW? Anyway, it's one of those fine stations.
Also on the Crime Watch, a new tool to try and stop illegal behavior on the river levee in Santa Cruz. It's called the Mosquito Noise Box. Action News reporter Phil Gomez is live in Santa Cruz with more on how the city's hoping it will have an effect on people.
Well, Dan, the city has installed mosquito noise boxes underneath some of their bridges along the levee. They say they've been effective in cutting back loitering and illegal activity happening there.
The Santa Cruz levee has a lot of foot and bicycle traffic that sometimes heads into a collision course with some groups who hang along the path.
I do ride the levee a lot, but all I can say is when I do see people under there, it's intimidating to ride by people that are loitering into the bridges.
To make the levee and especially those areas under bridges more friendly,